Hello, and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are still recovering from Halloween. Anyways, we're your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. And today we're talking about overcoming adversity in the eDiscovery field. But before we get to that, and woo, that sounds kind of dicey. Before we get to that, Angie, how are you doing with that Halloween hangover?
So I'm having this thing right now where I become very accustomed to having a lot of candy in my life. So the other day I wanted to go eat something and I realized that the person that I was when I went grocery shopping was not the same person who wanted a snack. And all I had was healthy food. Like I went in to the grocery store with big January 3rd energy. And by the time I wanted to eat, I was like, day after Thanksgiving, pie should be acceptable for every meal. That's the person I was by the time I got around to eating. So that's how my Halloween hangover is going.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. We've been trying to cut down on our DoorDash / Grubhub habits, but they've been a little over the chart since Halloween. Something about that sugar ingestion and all the treats, you just feel like you can't stop treating yourself. It's hard to come down from.
It really is. Now, do you have a favorite Halloween candy?
I am a big sucker for any kind of peanut butter, anything, or peanuts. And I also like chocolate. I'll say when I was younger, Reese's peanut butter cups, Reese's Pieces, and peanut M&Ms were like my jam. Now that I'm getting older, though, I really like that old, what is it? It's Payday.
Oh my God, I love Paydays.
Oh my gosh. They are so good. And there's no chocolate in them, but man, they are so good. Oh. So I would go that route every time. How about you? What are your faves?
Oh, that's so hard. So we got this bag of Reese's, mini Reese's this year. And I have very strong feelings about the mini Reese's having the better, the optimal chocolate to peanut butter ratio out of any Reese's size. But anyways, we got the one that had the white, the milk, and the dark chocolate. You know, every time I had one, I would have to have three because I would have to do a taste test. You know, it's like a tasting menu every single time, right? So I think I've become a dark chocolate Reese's
girly. I don't even know that I've had that. I need to explore.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you could do what I did and just do a taste test 7 times a day.
Yeah.
Until you feel like puking and then do it all again the next day.
You know, it was so funny. We had on Halloween, we had 11 and 12 year old boys that came to my house. And some of that was very unexpected. So I was happy that I was the cool mom that everybody wanted to come to their house and we were going to have a party. But I was also like, what the heck, man? This got out of control real fast.
Oh my God.
Anyway, at the end of the night, their favorite thing to do is to all sit around on the floor, dump out their candy and start doing bargaining, right? Yes. So you start hearing I got Whoppers. I'll give you 2 Whoppers for a Snicker, you know, whatever. But and there is this one.
Not enough Whoppers for a Snickers.
I know, right? Well, it's funny to hear their logic. What's worth more than the other, you know? But this one kid, I swear he must have pissed somebody off because they gave him a handful of Almond Joys when he went to their house. And he was like, bruh, nobody wants an Almond Joy. This sucks. And I was like,
He's not wrong.
I know. Something's never changed.
Oh, my God. I do not understand. Who likes those?
They are so disgusting. And if I have to eat them, they should count for a vegetable.
Agree. Or something. That's not candy. That's not a treat for me. But you remember being a kid, you go to the grocery store and you could just fill up your little sack from the bulk candy area.
Yeah.
So there's a local neighborhood deli and mini mart that existed when I was a kid and exists to this day. But it's family owned, one off little deli. And they had buckets of candy. You could go and make them or whatever. And one time my brother and I went and he stole a piece of candy and it was immediate karma because he choked on it in the middle of the store. We did the Heimlich on him.
That sounds like something that would happen to me. Can't get away with anything.
I know. And he's the youngest kid. He gets away with everything. That was his one moment.
Oh, man. That's hilarious.
Should we move this along?
Yeah, I guess we should get off our sugar high.
Yes. All right. Like Bree said, today we are not only talking about Halloween candy, but we are also talking about overcoming adversity in the e-discovery field. And before we dive into that, I want to just say that Bree and I spent a lot of time thinking about why we wanted to do this episode and how we wanted to structure it.
We really wanted to do this episode for a couple of different reasons. One, we want the e-discovery community to be a welcoming community. And part of that means addressing challenges that people face so they know that they're not alone and they can be empowered to find their value. And secondly, Angie and I have both been there. We've both been in the place where we felt like we didn't know our value. We felt like we were having to deal with some sort of adversity, and we've overcome that in ways and still dealing with it in some ways, I think. But we just wanted to open this up as an honest, true conversation. And this is a very different type of episode for us. We're not speaking on behalf of any organization, or we're not speaking on behalf of the industry. This episode is going to be filled with personal thoughts from both of us, and we want to open up the door to share with you, but also for you to share with us. Angie and I realize that we're not perfect people and we're doing the best that we can. We can't speak for everybody's experiences, so this episode is truly a reflection of our own thoughts and our own feelings as they relate to our personal life experiences and our environments. We're not subject matter experts here on adversity. We're just real people who continue to grow.
Absolutely. And so as far as structuring this episode, we decided, you know, we want to be as inclusive as possible, but we can't cover everything. Like Bree said, we're trying to create a culture of vulnerability and openness and awareness based on our own experiences. With all of that in mind, first, we're going to talk about breaking down barriers and how to overcome some bias that exists in legal tech and the e-discovery industries. And then we're going to move on and talk about how to build your support network within that community, and then your community in a more larger sense. Then we're going to talk about imposter syndrome, how prevalent it is, and some tips for mitigating its effects on your life. And finally, we're going to talk about maintaining healthy work-life balance, why that's so important for your confidence and self-esteem, and ways to achieve it when the demands of work can be both stressful and unpredictable.
Yeah, before we dive in, we do want to offer a trigger warning, quote unquote. We're not going to get too graphic about any of our conversation, and this episode is intended to be empowering and positive. We want to give you tools to overcome challenges, but if you're currently going through something, or if this topic is really hard for you due to some adversity that you have experienced or are experiencing, then please do what you feel is right for you, even if it means that you're testing the waters and then you need to cut us off, or we just need to skip the episode all entirely. That's okay too. We're going to have another episode. You're not going getting rid of the e-discovery chicks, and you're not going to hurt her feelings.
Absolutely not. So with that preamble, let's do this thing.
All right.
I think, first of all, like Bree and I were both really excited to talk about this. Like, I think it's something that has become a topic over maybe the last several years. And it's exciting to us that this type of vulnerability is something that, you know, gets spoken about within the community. And so we feel very honored to be able to share our experiences with you and really hope that they're helpful. Let's kick off this discussion by talking about breaking down barriers and being mindful about bias in the legal tech and e-discovery industries. And what's a better place to start than the oft-reviled glass ceiling? We know that many people struggle to reach leadership positions in legal tech and in e-discovery due to systemic barriers that can limit their upward mobility. That can include things like unequal access to high-profile cases, getting bucks out of responsibilities within your firm or your org, and, you know, maybe just not even being invited to a meeting, not being invited to have a seat at the table, or whatever else. I mean, this can be a whole host of things.
Yeah, and Angie and I were talking about this episode, you know, let me just back up and say, as Angie and I talk about any episode, we always try to bring forth some subject that we have some sort of expertise, even though we know we're still learning and growing every day. And we surely don't know all there is to know about anything. But we first approached this from a gender perspective, you know, overcoming adversity as a woman and e-discovery. which makes a lot of sense. Obviously, we're both women. Obviously, we've both had situations in our lives that we can attribute to negative or positive for the fact that we are a woman. Unfortunately, some of those are more negative than positive, but that's just our life experience. But then we started really talking about it, and I was like, you know, there's a lot of adversity that other people in the world have to deal with. Some even that I personally have had to deal with slash and do deal with based on other factors that I have. For me, I'm married to a Black man, and I have a multiracial, you know, child. There are things in life that I have to overcome just for the sheer fact that I have made that choice with who my family is. And sometimes that's a great thing, and sometimes it's a really hurtful thing. But that's just my own reality. But in that same thought process, I know that we all have things that either are permanent, like who we are and what choices we've made and maybe what we represent, just ourselves, or can even be a situational thing. You know, sometimes you have to overcome adversity because you found yourself in a season in life where you're a caretaker for someone, or you have a health issue or something that might be fleeting, but it is your reality right now. And because of that situation, it's caused some sort of, you know, obstacle for you to overcome in your career. And then there's the whole factor of even other people's insecurities, which has been something that I think took me a long time in my career to figure out. People, you know, create that glass ceiling because they themselves are insecure and they don't want to be seen, you know, in terms of what their failures or shortcomings are.
Oh, absolutely. They don't want to have that like reflected back at them by your successes. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to talk about ways to shatter that glass ceiling, or at least crack it, right? For a couple of things that I've done that I think have worked for me. Number one, like I've sought out high visibility projects throughout my career. So that, and they might be projects where it's a subject matter that I'm not super comfortable with, or it's something new for me and it's really challenging. But the point to me of seeking out those kind of high-vis projects is they have a direct impact on business outcomes, or they involve some sort of cross-departmental collaboration. And they only, like, they have not only helped me build out my skill sets as I progressed in my career, but they've also expanded the visibility that I get among senior leadership in my organization. And so for me, that's felt like a really impactful way of cracking that glass ceiling. And then the second thing I've done, and this has taken me a long time to kind of figure out how to do, and I still am not perfect at it, but I self-advocate. You know, I think sometimes, like my personality and part of that is being a woman, I think I find it really hard to gloat about my own achievements. You know, it feels sort of, there's like kind of an ick to it, right? For me. And it's like me imposing that on myself, right? Because when I see other women doing this same behavior, I'm like, hell yeah, girl, like love that, right? Or when I see other people doing that, I'm like, oh yeah, get yours, you know, but I've found it hard to do that for myself. So I've had to practice how to advocate for myself, but it is effective, right? Like you can think about every, you know, year-end review that you do of yourself, right? You know, you can advocate for yourself there. You can list your achievements and your accomplishments, or just, you know, flag them in the normal course of conversation. And I think that that can be a really high impact way of shattering the glass ceiling too.
Yeah. And so I have a couple of thoughts as well to add on to that. One is fear. Fear drives a lot of negative things in life. You know, I'm afraid I'm going to fail. I'm afraid I can't do this. I'm afraid other people are going to find out that I'm really a loser. You know, all those things that we say to ourselves or we think to ourselves. Remember that other people are saying that too. It's not just you, right? And people are just in general afraid to go out and try something new because what if they fail? What if it's too much of a commitment? What if they get in over their head? What if they can't answer all the questions? Well, I found that when you have those kinds of situations, be the first one to find your courage. Be the first one that's like, whoa, I don't know what the solution is to this problem, but I'm pretty sure I can work on finding a solution, and I may not be able to solve all of it, but at least I can make some headway in the right direction. When you're that person who throws away the fear and picks up your courage and starts moving in a direction to help everyone, I think that helps create value for yourself, but also helps empower you so that you can more easily get rid of that tendency to immediately feel afraid. You really need to understand your own value. I am one who, for many reasons, has had the hardest time trying to establish my own value in myself. And I know that everybody that's listening has their own story and their own obstacles on this journey for themselves. Some of the things that have really torn away at my own personal value or self-worth have been things that started out very young in my life. You know, when you have childhood trauma, whether it's abuse or any kind of sexual misbehavior or what have you, that starts a pattern of thinking in your life that you think that you should be ashamed. You think you're not good enough. You think that you're damaged. And I've certainly had several things like that happen to me when I was young, and it created a cycle of thinking. And, you know, when we create cycles of thinking, good or bad, then we have a tendency to perpetuate that cycle, that momentum, unless we purposefully stand up and break that cycle. That certainly has been something I've lived out in my lifetime. And growing up as an imperfect, broken person and trying to find value in a way that I didn't even really know how to do myself has been a journey in my adult life that is certainly still not over. But I am at a much better place than I was earlier in my career. And I have to say that I'm mentioning this with all of my heart, that it's one of the most, it's one of the biggest priorities that you should make for yourself, because unless you know your value, you will never have other people that can see your value. You will never be able to stand up for yourself, and you won't be able to kind of create those boundaries that in a healthy way that will establish the direction that you take yourself. And in thinking about creating those boundaries for yourself, it's important that you have your own moral compass, your own, maybe like you think of it like a mission statement, or I always think of it like, if at the end of my life, I can say fill in the blank, I feel like I was successful. And yeah. Know what that is in terms of, you know, all the roles that you have in your life as a daughter, as a mother, as a, you know, a son or dad or whatever your role might be, an employee, a friend. What are the things, how do you define success for yourself? What does that look like? And know that, because you're going to get challenged and you're going to have situations that come up at work and the e-discovery landmine of work. And you're going to be like, God, I want to punch that person in the face. What the hell? And then you're going to come home and like, well, does that help me be really successful in the way I want to be? I'm kind of thinking not. So let's revisit, shall we? I think that those are some important things to prioritize for yourself so that you can break through that glass ceiling, or at least make a crack in it, as Angie said.
I love that take. Like, I was at a conference a couple months ago and I talked to this career coach, and she spoke about finding your self-worth and this idea of a mission statement. And for her, she was like, what are three traits that you want to embody? Like, pick three words and come back to them. You know, maybe once a quarter or once a month or whatever cadence feels right for you. Check in with yourself. Like, are those still your values? And if they are you, do you feel like you're living up to them? It was a helpful exercise for me of being like, oh, what are the things that I want to embody? Because then when I'm communicating with the world and establishing my personal brand, I can be sure to adhere to those.
Yeah. And I think having the flexibility to change what those words might be or what your mission statement might be as you go through different seasons of your life, because you'll find that as a young professional, and I'm sure this is like no duh to a lot of people, but as a young professional, you're going to walk into the workplace and have to overcome a completely different set of circumstances than you might later on in your life. And so those, yeah. You know, those words, those mission statements, those goals, however you want to phrase it or look at it, they're going to change. But having the habit to constantly go back and revisit it, I think is really important.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so I think we also wanted to talk about the existence and impact of bias in this realm. And I want to say, you know, we are not experts on this topic, but we wanted to address it in this episode from the perspective that we must be mindful of our biases, you know, good, bad, or neutral, or otherwise, of our biases so that we don't ignore them and in ignoring them end up hurting someone. And, you know, on the flip side, you can really help people if you know your own biases. Everybody's been through a hardship. Everyone's endured something, maybe a big one, a small one, temporary, permanent, who knows. But all I know is that when I look back on those times in my life, when I was really going through it, I'm so grateful for the people who looked past whatever was happening in their life, whatever their own biases were, to give me grace. And I try to remember that as I move through the world, because you just never know what else someone, or like what somebody else is going through.
Yeah. So I went the eDiscovery Chick nerd route and looked up the definition of bias. So in the dictionary, per Google.
According to the internet.
It defines bias as prejudice in favor or against of one thing, person, or group compared with another, usually in a way considered to be unfair. I believe that we're all created very unique and individually. And not only that, we're all put into our own unique and individual circumstances in life to endure with good or bad. And all those things form who we are. And though we have a lot of things that are similar, I mean, Angie and I are joking around all the time about how, you know, we both love steaks and martinis and peanut butter candy. But in even though we have so much in common, there are some things that are very, very different about us based on just our upbringing and who we are and our parents and where we grew up in the world. So those things all form and shape our bias. And it's important for us when we see these thoughts come into play in our real life that we understand where they come from and we assess, is that a positive thing? Is it a good thing that I'm holding people accountable to this idea based on my own bias? Or am I actually being unfair because I grew up or I was surrounded in an environment where XYZ was the expectation, but really that's negative because it's unfair to people and it's not inclusive and it's hurtful. But I really need to understand myself in order to understand how I am coming across to other people.
We often think of bias in these like very binary and very triggering situations like gender or race, but it can also be things like primacy recency bias, right? Or familiarity bias. And I know for me, I walk through the world and I have a pretty strong recency bias. Maybe that means I don't have a great memory. I don't know. But I like, you know, we did some bias exercises at work and I realized, oh my God, I really favor the last thing in time that I encountered. And so I try to remember that when I'm moving through the world and be like, okay, am I giving too much weight to this just because it's the last thing I read? Or am I giving the proper amount of weight to this, given, mm-hmm. you know, everything surrounding that situation? And then another thing you said that I feel like is so important is, yeah, you know, you and I are really similar in a lot of ways, but then we also have like very different views about kind of big things, you know, like religion mm-hmm. being one of them. But I am so proud of us for A, like talking openly about our views in a very respectful and healthy way. And then realizing that, yeah, we can be different and we can still be super close and have this amazing relationship. And I think that that's also an important thing too, is your bias doesn't have to ruin a friendship or rule your life, you know?
Yeah.
It can be a thing that is inherent to who you are, but that you are aware of and you work with so that you don't hurt people. Okay, but before we move on from talking about bias, I do want to raise a great point, Brie, that you flagged for me, which is that sometimes bad things do happen. Sometimes people do act on their biases or they do something that makes you feel really crappy. And so I want to take a moment here and make some space for us to talk about what do you do in that situation?
Well, so this is the part that makes my stomach want to totally throw up and my heart is now on the floor because you know, I have been in situations before, and I know that you have as well, where others' bias has affected me in a way that was extremely hurtful, has cost me a job at one point in terms of my professional life, has made me the victim of abuse or sexual misconduct or both. And I've been there. And I think that when we go there, and hopefully, you know, this is a no-brainer, but in case anybody out there is struggling with what do I do with this next and needs encouragement, I would want to say, number one, do not keep it to yourself. Make sure that you share this information or the event or whatever's happened to you.
Like if it's safe to do so.
If it's safe to do so with the people that can do something about it. So people I would share with would be people like, one, counselor. I would want to get therapy. I need to work through this myself. Two, perhaps your HR person, if that is a safe place for you to go and discuss, this is what's happened to me. Those people, they are the subject matter experts on this subject. They'll help you navigate that. Then, you know, there's a question of just depending on how egregious the situation is, the law enforcement might need to be involved as well. It's not okay for somebody just because they have a bias to reach out and hurt you physically or emotionally. That's not okay. And if you were the victim, you definitely need to speak out. Another reason why network is so important for all of us is that we don't have to be alone. If something like this has happened to you, know that you're not alone and there is a network of people, and it's not just women. I acknowledge that there's men and women of all shapes and sizes and races and sexual orientations out there who have been the victim of this kind of behavior, and it's serious and it's not okay. And I think as long as we stay quiet, we enable that behavior to continue.
Times have changed and I've changed over time. I remember very vividly an instance probably about 10 years ago, and I was a little baby prosecutor and I was on the record, and one of the lawyers in the courtroom came up to me as I was speaking, and this wasn't uncommon. Like, people would come up and try to like get their cases heard earlier or whatever. And so this guy comes up to me and he like vice grips my arm and goes, "You look good in V-necks," and then walked away. And it's funny, I've thought about that from time to time, and I'm sure my face was just stricken, right, when this happened. And if that had happened to me today, I didn't do anything. You know, I just stood there like a deer in the headlights, because you just never think it's going to happen. And if that had happened to me today, I would love to think I would have had a different, more empowered response. And I think what I'm getting at here is your journey with trauma is your own. Whatever journey you take, as long as it feels right for you and you're not hurting anybody, that's the right path for you. For me, I think it took me a really long time to deal with that. And I've, you know, had other things happen in my career. That's just the one moment that sticks out to me. And I think it's important to have people in your corner that you trust and that you can share that with if you want to. This is why we need to give each other grace. It's because you don't know the path that somebody else has walked.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, you saying what you just shared made me kind of go down memory lane myself and remember back to when I first started in eDiscovery. I was a paralegal, and young women paralegals back in my day, there was a whole group of people who knew that they had been violated, they had been touched, they had been felt up, they had been raped even, they had been taken advantage of sexually, but they signed a severance agreement saying that they would not prosecute that attorney or that firm for that behavior. And they did that out of fear because they were a single mom, or they were the only provider financially for their family. And they were afraid if they spoke up and said something against that attorney, that they would never be able to work in the legal field again, which is a huge problem if that's the way that you're feeding your family. I can completely relate to all of that. I was a person in that situation, and it is frightening as hell. It's something that I know is not easy to put your whole family on the line, or even if it's just you yourself, to speak out and do something. And it may be that you have to walk away from a job to get yourself out of that situation. But in hindsight, I will tell you, giving into that fear is not your only option. You can make the option to walk away from a job and you will find other work. And the better that you are networked with other people in our community, the more easy that transition will be, which is another great reason for growing a community for yourself. By the way, I would just encourage you, do not live every day in that fear. You did not do anything wrong. Somebody else did something to you. The other thing that I will say, and this took me years to figure it out, and I don't even know if I figured it all out to this day, but this does not define who you are. How somebody else valued you or did not value you does not define you. And what somebody else did to you does not define you either. And so rise above that thought process and fight it with every piece of your being, because that is such a negative and toxic way that that behavior lives on. It's like you're allowing it to take everything from you, and you have the power to stop it. And so I would just encourage you, and I know that that is extremely difficult, and I'm saying that because I've had to go to years of counseling myself to deal with those kinds of issues. And so if that's what you need to do for you, do that. But there's help out there. There are people who understand. The more you talk about it, the more you'll find out that you are not alone. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox, but I just want to encourage you to please, you know, value who you are as a human, and do not allow somebody to strip you of your value, your worth, or your joy.
Amen to that. I mean, let's pivot and talk about some strategies for success. My first suggestion is try to save praise. Like if you get an email, and then revisit it from time to time, right? Like if you get an email from somebody saying you did a good job on something, save it. Just put it in a folder in your email. And then if you're having a dark day, go ahead, revisit it. And then the flip side of that is send praise. I always find sending those emails to people saying you did a wonderful job, sending those emails to people that are climbing the ladder behind you, or to your colleagues or your superiors, you know, everyone needs support. You make yourself feel better, and the recipient will get a boost as well. And then my last thought here, pursue continuing education, whatever form that looks like for you. So for me, like I sign up for a bunch of listservs where I try to stay up to date on things that are happening, and having that knowledge, kind of keeping my finger on the pulse of what's happening in the industry, it makes me feel more confident. It makes me feel in the loop.
I went through some leadership training where there were different levels of thinking, and it went from like 1 to 7, I think. Wait, 1 to 6. So now I'm going to get fired by my career coach. She's gonna be like, did you listen to anything that I told you?
It's over there. Shame.
I know. But the highest level of thinking, it was with the mindset of we all win versus going into it with the mindset of I win, or going into it with the mindset of I'll help you win, because we all struggle with tendencies to do either. But thinking about it like we all win has been really key to me. Like, does Brie win this? Does Angie also win this? Okay, then I can get on board with this project. The same is true for business. Does my company win? Do I win? Great. This sounds like a worthwhile initiative. Like making sure that you have some of those, I guess, like those markers as to where you want to be. And the time that those come in handy, because like that sounds like super cheesy, like everybody wins, yay. But
no, I don't think it is. Like, I think Steve Jobs was super famous for, he always wanted to get to the right answer, but he didn't have to be the right,
exactly,
the person who was right. And
exactly.
I think it's that mentality.
Well, and that's exactly where I think it's helpful to establish that's your goal first, because if you're a hard-headed little jackass like me and you go into a meeting and you're like, no, I know the right way and I know the way we're supposed to do this and I need to do all the things so they can be perfect. Well, guess who's winning? Nobody, because I can't do everything perfect and I probably will screw it up and nobody wants to help me. So I just lost the whole thing. So invest your time in getting to know yourself and how others perceive you. So I would also say beat the self-centered tendencies that we all tend to have, because we tend to walk into any situation and we can't help it. We're human beings and we walk into any situation from our own mind's eye, right? Like, oh God, what are everybody going to say about what I'm wearing? Or what, God, we're late. What are they going to think about that? And you know, how is this going to affect me? It's all about me. But the time that this becomes really a burden, at least for me, is when I receive feedback or I interpret dealings at work as they were meant to me personally. And that is not a good place to be, because in generally speaking, they were not.
You're only the main character in your version of life.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And nobody else thinks I'm the main character. It's so weird. Identify, like I think I mentioned this before, to identify what success looks like for you. But in that process of identifying, hey, I'm successful if fill in the blank, what is keeping me from getting there? Where are the gaps? Are there things standing in my way? Do I want to become the most wonderful attorney that ever was, but I don't have a bar card? Well, then maybe that's step number one, right? It's really important that we are able to work with one another. I honestly was not very proud of the way I always collaborated with people. I felt very misunderstood for a lot of my life for several different reasons. I felt misunderstood. I felt like I just didn't get things the same way that other people got things. I always felt like an outsider. I would feel or I would feel like I had to take the burden of the project and I would be the one burning my candle at both ends and everybody else is like having happy hour, you know? And I'm like, what? How am I the one working late again? This is so weird. And so I would just pass on group opportunities. And honestly, that's not a smart move if you're trying to get anywhere in life, because we need each other. And the reason why we need each other is, well, one of the reasons anyway, is for what we just shared, right? Like, we're going to sharpen each other. Iron sharpens iron is the saying. We're going to make each other grow and we're going to challenge each other and we're going to learn from one another. So that's one reason. But we're human beings. We're meant to be in a clan. We're meant to have support. We're meant to have encouragement. We're meant to share experiences with one another so that we can make fully well-rounded and informed decisions. And so when we talk about working as a group, one thing that comes to mind is mentorship and sponsorship. Mentorship mm-hmm. provides guidance and support, and sponsorship is having someone that's in a position of influence who actively champions your career. Having either or both of those can really be a game changer. The benefit of having one of those, and even I would say a strong network, is that we can benefit from others' experiences and their failures. And also we can benefit from other people's networks, you know, who Angie knows, she might introduce me to somebody that helps me out along the way and vice versa. And they can benefit from your perspective as well. And we can help each other grow in all areas, even areas that we might not have even explored in the first place.
I feel like the question that I've had throughout my career and that I hear people asking is, how do I find one of these magical unicorns in the wild, right? How do I find a mentor or a sponsor? And this might be off the beaten path opinion about this, but I'm of the opinion that anybody can be a mentor to you. So for me, I'm like, let me look at the people in my life. It doesn't have to be your boss or somebody ahead of you in your career. But for me, like, I look to my friends and people that are in my orbit for inspiration, right? Like, I've got a friend who is an amazing chef, right? And so I look to him as like my chef mentor kind of a thing, right? And I've got another friend who is the most amazing writer. You know, everything she writes is flawless, gorgeous, it's pithy. You know, and so I look to her for that. And then I have another friend who just has this unquellable zest for life. And so I try to draw inspiration from all of these people. And maybe mentor is too strong of a word for those folks. But to me, I look at those people there's something about them that I find admirable and want to emulate. And so to me, they are mentors to me in that way. Taking this back to the career route, if you're looking for one of these folks in your career, one thing I found helpful is really voicing my career ambitions. And of course, this requires some pre-thought, right? What do you want out of life or out of the next year or whatever? But in my experience, sponsors tend to look for people who have ambition and a vision. And so during performance reviews, career discussions, or just informal conversations, I found it really helpful to share my career goals and express my readiness to take on new or greater responsibilities. And I feel like being like that level of explicitness has helped people help me. You know, like I had a boss when I worked at the law firm. He was just a wonderful mentor to me. And one day, you know, we're just shooting the breeze. And he just asked, like, hey, what do you want? What are your ambitions over the next year? In the moment, I was kind of like, let me think about that and get back to you. And I came to him with kind of like a list of things, right? Like, I want to do this kind of deposition. I want to have this role in a trial. I want to do this. And he was like, great, let's line them up like dominoes and knock them down. And that was incredible.
Awesome. That's awesome. Because we think that people know more about us than they actually do. I mean, it's like that self-centered idea of like, well, everybody knows how, you know, what I'm good at and what I suck at and what I'm doing. Like, no, nobody's paying attention because they're paying attention to themselves. Like, that's what's right. happening. Or everything else is going on. That's not you. Verbalizing, you know, what you want is so important. But before you can verbalize it, you have to, like you said, you had to think about it for a minute and put down a list. Like, here's specifically what I want to achieve. And so that's step number one. Step number two is being able to communicate that to the people who or the person that can help make that possible for you if it's not you yourself. So that's a super important piece of advice that I'm really happy that Angie shared. I cannot say in my career that I've ever had one mentor the whole time or one sponsor that was just, you know, changed my whole life. Yes. So I was thinking about this, you know, this happens in pieces. It's like people are puzzle pieces that all come together and they build throughout your career. You know, I can remember being a very brand new paralegal and having to have a senior paralegal teach me how to do certified mail and learn the docketing system, you know, like super, you know, admin and junior, but I didn't learn any of that stuff in college or paralegal school. Like having somebody to kind of take me under their wing at that moment in my life was crucial. I had to have that education. The other thing is you will outgrow your mentorships. I mean, eventually I'm going to learn how to do a green card and use a docketing system. And then I got to move on to bigger and better things. And sometimes your mentors will come with you and sometimes they won't. It just kind of depends. And I do feel like people are placed in your life very purposeful for a reason at different times in your life. And that if you have taken the time to put together, to start putting together the puzzle pieces, wow, I'm like tripping myself up on my words. Then you can really build a beautiful picture with yourself as a person and your career. If you feel like you're in a place in your life where you're like, nobody's giving to me, nobody's seeing my value, nobody's trying to help me, I don't have a mentor, I don't have a sponsor, I don't think I can learn anything from anybody, whatever, then you get yourself ready for when that person comes along and you put yourself in a place where that person can intersect with you. If it's not at your job, then you go join another organization. You go figure something out. It is up to you. You take responsibility of getting yourself ready there and being available. Because if you want it and you speak it out there and you prepare for it, it'll happen.
Or you can take that moment to pay it forward to somebody who's behind, yes. You know, like throw that ladder down behind you and help somebody else climb it.
You really can receive a lot for yourself while you're giving. I have been so blessed, especially as of late, to have women come across my path through Women in eDiscoveries in particular, and now some with ASEDS, to have younger people in our industry come to me and say, hey, what do you think about XYZ, or what are your thoughts, or what's your experience been? And kind of taking those people under your wing and sharing yourself with them, it actually helps you too. It helps you learn. It helps you find your value.
Yeah. And I think another way of finding these people, I mean, we've kind of alluded to this, but I think it's the networking. So Bree, you are just like an absolute whiz at this. So what are your thoughts on networking? Like, why is it helpful and how do you go about it?
I do not think that I'm a whiz at this, but, you know, it's and it's so funny that and Angie said this before to me. She's like, you're such a great networker. I'm like, no, I'm not.
You are, though.
But you
I
know,
will die on that hill.
I grew up and when I was a little girl growing up, I had a really hard time making friends and I got bullied a lot. I never really felt like I got the social graces or the coolness factor enough that people would actually, you know, want to listen to what I said or want to include me.
Oh, girl, me neither.
So I was like, oh, okay. But you know what the whole thing is that as we grow up and we accept who we are and we know who we are and we develop that own our own sense of worth and value and love for ourselves, then it opens up the door for other people to be able to do the same, hopefully. But networking to me is still, even though I enjoy it a lot and I feel very fulfilled by it, it is hard. Like Angie was, she even used the word ick earlier, and that's exactly how I would describe networking sometimes. It feels icky. It feels like you're being very braggadocious sometimes, like, oh, I'm so wonderful and so important and I have all these things to share with you. And it feels like maybe you're a car salesman, like a used car lot, and you're trying to shove some product down people's face. I force myself to do it despite all of my own, you know, issues. And the reason why I think it's important to do that is, like I said earlier, we need to have a community behind us to make us better and for us to also empower the community in a more impactful way. So I would encourage anyone out there that's like, ugh, I so do not want to take the time to go. First of all, I have to get my real pants on. Like, that's a problem all
in itself. That's the worst.
So if you're feeling that way, I would urge you to like make it a point to maybe do 3 networking events between now and the end of the year, or 2 or 1, like whatever you feel like would be a success for you. And push yourself to get out of your comfort zone. You will thank yourself for it. Even if it blows and you show up and you're like, oh, these people were lame and I didn't learn anything. You got out there, like you put yourself out there. And the next time you're going to walk in with a different mindset and you will come across people that you'll click with and jive with, I promise. And by the way, when we do feel like this is super lame and I'm not getting anything from it, then we might want to check our own mindsets, Bree Murphy. Maybe this isn't about you. Maybe it's what you can give to others. So instead of walking into a networking situation thinking, what am I going to get, then maybe we walk into that situation thinking, what can I give? And if I happen to get something from it, what a blessing that is. And along those same lines, I honestly feel most comfortable when we have events. If I have a job, if I volunteered to do something, then I feel like I have a purpose and a reason to be there. If I'm like the greeter around the table, I'll be the most friendly, outgoing greeter. I am not an extrovert, but I will be that the greeter that and that's my job. And I will always do my job the best I can. And so that tip is, if you're feeling like you're going to be super awkward and there is some sort of event that you want to get involved in, see if there's a role that you can have. Can you be the person that straightens up the chairs? Can you be the person that signs the name tags? Can you, whatever, like, what is your task that gives you a sense of value that you can bring to the table? And then hopefully that'll make you feel more comfortable.
God, that's an amazing tip. I never thought about doing that. But yeah, I feel like I'm an extrovert who's a little bit unfriendly. And so networking always sort of gives me the heebie-jeebies. So for those who are listening who really hate this shit, here are my thoughts. One, somebody gave me this piece of advice years ago, and I've loved it. Send follow-up emails. You attend a webcast you like, you can email the presenter and thank them. You know, you read an article that you think is really impactful, email the author and thank them and tell them why. Pros of this, you don't have to talk to anybody in person, you don't have to leave your house, and you do not have to put real pants on, but it counts as networking. So my second piece of advice here is be intentional about your network. The managing partner of my old law firm used to do this, and I thought it was brilliant, but she would keep a log of thoughtful details about people. Like, I think she had a spreadsheet, and there's no shame in this. I thought this was brilliant. I've taken it and incorporated it into my life. But when you follow up with somebody, like, include a thoughtful detail about them. So like my like old managing partner, you could bet that I would talk to her very rarely, but every time we emailed, she would have something about like our last conversation or some detail about my life that she remembered, and she would include it in the email. And I thought that this was otherworldly, right? Like I thought she was just some sort of savant until she spilled her secrets at a law firm event for women. And so now I try to do that too. Like, oh, hey, how's your dog or whatever? Like, is he still afraid of peeing in the rain? You know, whatever. It can be something stupid like that. But having that kind of thoughtful detail and that personal connection, for me, it makes it feel less icky. My third tip is if you feel uncomfortable, spend more time asking questions than you do talking about yourself. So if you get nervous or anxious that you're going to say the wrong thing, which I do, and I fear that I'll say something out of awkwardness that I'll regret, if I'm feeling that way, I'll kind of flip it around and just spend my time asking the other person questions about themselves. I'll ask them open-ended questions. You know, I'm genuinely curious about them. This isn't fake or anything like that. It lets me sort of be a passenger almost, which feels like a more comfortable role. Sometimes I feel a little bit less like politician-y if I do it that way. And then I try to like, you know, really listen to people. Everybody has something to offer, right? Not everybody's going to be your cup of tea, but you might learn something.
Yeah. I mean, I would also say too, if you struggle with the in-person networking a lot, go to events where that's what they're designed for, right? They're designed for people in e-discovery to network with one another. That way you don't feel icky, hopefully, or less icky when you show up and you're trying to talk to people. Like that's the intent. Go to an ASIDS event. Go to any Women in e-discovery event. Go to any, I mean, I don't even, there's lots of organizations that we could go to and conferences for that matter.
So let's pivot, talk about imposter syndrome. If you don't know what that is, felicitations. You're the universe's favorite. But for the rest of us mortals, imposter syndrome can be really, really impactful. And for those who don't know, imposter syndrome is the feeling of self-doubt and inadequacy despite evident accomplishments and success. And it can manifest in a number of ways. So it can be struggles speaking up in meetings, the fear of being wrong, the fear of looking dumb, beating yourself up for small mistakes. Oh my God, if I had a nickel for every time that I spent just anxiety spiraling over a misplaced comma in an email as a law firm associate, I could retire tomorrow. And then along those lines, imposter syndrome can also manifest as thinking that any mistake you make is huge and it makes you stupid and unworthy or other thoughts like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I can relate to everything that you're saying, Angie, because I've had similar feelings myself. I've also had struggled with assuming defeat before I even walk on the battlefield. Like, I'm never going to even try to do fill in the blank because I know I'm just going to fail. That's not a positive way of thinking. Creating your own glass ceiling. Like, how many times have we made choices to do or not to do something that's limited us ourselves? Like, it's nobody else's fault but ours. Fear, we've talked about that throughout this whole episode. I mean, you're never too old and too accomplished to have that fear. Also, I would say that, you know, when we do struggle with imposter syndrome, we have a tendency to ignore the little victories that we have. Maybe your little victory looks different than my little victory. My little victory a long time ago in Women in e-discovery in terms of public speaking was I was asked to moderate a panel for a conference, and I thought that I was going to die. I thought I was going to throw up and have diarrhea all at the same time, and maybe my head would also explode while I was up there in front of everybody. Which I look back on and I'm like, that was so silly because that was really easy and it was great and it was such an empowering moment. But man, I was afraid of that. And when I did accomplish it, I don't know that I really gave myself the accolades that I should have because I wasn't a main speaker. I wasn't the one with all the expertise. Like, I was just up there like pointing the finger at the next person to say the next brilliant thing. I wasn't the one that was saying the brilliant things. And so I just kind of brushed it under the carpet like it wasn't that big of a deal when that was a huge deal. That was a big deal for me. And so I should have maybe celebrated that a little bit more. So yay.
All right. So let's talk about ways to overcome imposter syndrome. And one of the ways that I think both Brie and I have found really helpful is narrowing in on how we can boost our confidence. Here are some things that I've done that have worked for me. I said this before, but like, and it sounds kind of trite, but just do something nice for somebody else that helps boost their confidence. I think it's good to put that energy out there in the world, doing your part to create a supportive and empowering space for people. For me, that just feels really good. So my second piece of advice here is to tally your wins. Bree mentioned this earlier, but I think it's really important. Keep track of your successes. I think that your successes aren't limited to your work. Personal successes are just as, if not more, important. And so I'll share one of mine that is sustaining me at the moment. About a month ago, we took our toddler to Italy, which I know is a questionable decision in and of itself, but here we are. I know. So we flew Seattle to Amsterdam, Amsterdam to Florence. And on that Amsterdam to Florence leg, Harper, it was like she was having an exorcism. She wouldn't stop screaming, crying, flailing, hitting, kicking, snot, the whole thing. And I can't explain why, but this calm took over my body. And I was just like, okay, I'm doing everything I can to physically help my kid. So I'm going to take some deep breaths, apologize to the people around me, recognize the limitations of my agency over this situation, and know that I'm doing all I can, but I'm not going to panic. And I am so proud of myself for not panicking in that moment, because I easily could have. That's my natural inclination, is to panic when those things happen. But I'm really proud of myself that I didn't. And every time I look back on that moment, I get a little bit of a boost. Tally those wins, big, small, personal, professional, they all matter.
Well, and I think it takes a lot of knowing yourself and knowing what you want from yourself to be successful to even understand what those wins look like. You needed to know, like, yes, hey, I'm doing this thing as a parent that I'm not super proud of, and I wish I was better at it, and I'm going to work on that. And then when you saw a glimpse of that happen, you're like, oh, that is something I can celebrate. But you have to have that upfront moment with yourself first to even know to celebrate. And I've had it happen in backwards. I've had people come up to me and say something like, man, you're incredible at fill in the blank. And I'm like, no, I'm not. That's stupid. Like, that's not a big deal. Well, I don't understand what it's all about. And it took me a moment to step back and be like, oh, well, it's because this is a natural talent of mine and it comes really easily. And I didn't know that this was something that made me awesome. And how can I use that to bring value to other people and other in my organization? You know? And then celebrate the victories that I have there. My struggle with my weight has been my whole life. And there's been times in my life turning down a donut has been like a huge victory. Okay, so we're talking about some ideas about building that confidence. And I'll just throw in there a couple for me. One is actually becoming super uncomfortable at first and overcoming that. And then the fact that you overcame it builds your confidence like nothing else. And for me, that means public speaking. And that's something I've personally been working a lot on in the last few years, which is why you'll see me at different conferences and stuff, because I'm a sucker and I'll take a public speaking gig because I know that it makes me better. It's something
you are such a good public speaker.
I don't see, like, she says that, and because I can't accept a compliment, which is another problem I have. But
No, you have this amazing voice and presence.
Well, thank you, Angie. I'll accept your compliment. I know it's something that I can do well. I have done well. I would like to be better, and I'd like to feel more comfortable at it, because I do feel like I am super out of my skin and out of my element when I do it. But every time that I make myself uncomfortable and I do a job where somebody's like, man, I got a lot out of that, that makes me feel amazing. I would also say, fill the holes. Where are the holes? Like, what are you beating yourself up about? If I knew anything about AI or TAR or could be more proficient and fill in the blank about e-discovery, then I feel like I might be more valuable to my team. Get in the industry, learn, show up, grow, absorb. You might go to a meeting or hear a webinar or participate in some event and you're like, I don't even know what the fuck they're talking about. I've totally been there. And you know what I do when I go somewhere and people start using acronyms or they start talking about a subject I have no idea what it is? I just start taking notes. I even have notes that are like random acronyms and words, because I'm like, I don't even know what the freak that word means, man. I'm not that smart. And I'll go look them up. I mean, that's how you learn. I mean, Angie has the greatest vocabulary. Sometimes she says words, I'm like, she's super duper Harry Potter smart. I am not.
But do you know why? Because I'm a huge nerd. I have a spreadsheet of vocab. And at least a couple times a week, I add like a new fun word.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea about this. This proves my point exactly.
I love it. I just add it here and there. It makes me happy. I don't know. I can't explain why. I'm just a nerd, I think.
No, that's great, because you took that as your personal challenge to keep growing, which, by the way, is my last point I was going to bring up.
You're welcome. I was just trying to tee you up.
I know. Refuse to stop growing is what I'm going to say. Because you've done that for yourself, you're spreading that. Like, it's a ripple effect.
All right. So we're going to close this out by talking about work-life balance, because working in e-discovery can often mean putting in long hours in very high stakes, super stressful, time pressured situations. And I know I've experienced really crippling levels of anxiety and even full fledged panic attacks when dealing with pressure, both internal and external, of producing a really high quality work product. And so, Brie, I mean, what are your thoughts about that? How have you coped with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's important to realize, like, why is it the way that it is in the first place? Besides just the fact that we're all business minded and we're all trying to make money to feed our families. Like, that's an obvious, right? Or feed ourselves. Even if
I want to buy fancy cheese for myself.
Oh my God. I just want to pay the bills, bitch. So.
Oh, I mean, that too. my economic dream for myself is to go to the store and buy cheese without looking at the price tag.
Oh my God. Wouldn't that be amazing? I would love that too.
I dream of that.
I think it's important to realize that the foundation of this whole entire e-discovery industry is litigation. That's always at the heart of what we do, because we're always considering whatever we are doing to be under a deadline. And the ultimate success is whether or not the judge and jury buy or admit what we're trying to present. Those are high stakes.
Absolutely. And I think on top of the pressure, there is an ebb and flow to the work. One week you're drowning and the next it's pretty light. And I think that unpredictability creates this really robust mental fortitude among people who work in this industry. For me, at least, it feels like navigating all of that, the pressure, the high and low tides, the anxiety, all of that. If you have caregiving responsibilities or extracurricular endeavors outside of that, it can feel really daunting to try to manage all of that. I think I've gotten a little bit more adept at drawing boundaries during a really heavy work moment now that I have a kid. But I think I really could have benefited from that perspective before I had a child, because I didn't always prioritize myself and I always prioritized work. And I think I really hurt myself by doing that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That was really, really difficult for me to navigate in my younger years. I mean, it still is difficult. It's not like it's super easy, but it's definitely, I have very well established boundaries now that I wish I would have had a long time ago.
It's hard to put those in place.
Yeah.
And so I think too that this can play out in the leadership context as well, because as I've advanced in my career, I feel like the stress of managing more important, higher stakes, higher visibility work has only intensified my need for that balance. At times, I felt this intense pressure to perform at peak efficiency, always to exercise the ultimate savvy, to be witty, to be polite, but not a pushover, assertive, but not domineering, happy, but not frivolous, zealous, but not hysterical, all of that, regardless of whatever I was dealing with in my personal life. And I felt at times, you know, I can't slip up even for a second, you know, a single misplaced period in an email, all of that would just tank my credibility. You know, and that's not logical or reasonable, and that's not how I view others, but that's how I viewed myself, and that's the kind of pressure that I put on myself to perform. Meanwhile, backstage, I was managing an invisible disability, a completely debilitating pregnancy, or some other family emergency, or just my need to have friends and a social life. And I think that that just feels really impossible sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think so as well. You know, it's weird that it happens at this point in our life that we're like, oh shit, I guess there's a thing where we have to take care of ourselves. And I don't even know how to do that because I spent my whole life taking care of everybody else. So I think that being a leader, and by the way, we are leaders in so many ways. We don't have to be a manager of people in order to be a leader in our organization or in our industry, but it does bring an extra layer of stress. We can also be leaders in our communities, in our homes, in our churches, and our, you know, in schools, whatever. And I think a lot of people that are successful in e-discovery, by the way, do also wear multiple hats in our communities, and we're leaders in other ways outside of our company. And so with that brings, you know, lots of other things to consider when we consider work-life balance. You know, another stressor for me, just FYI, and maybe there's other people that are struggling with this, but constantly feeling like you're not qualified. But maybe I don't have the education that somebody else might have, or the background or the experience. There's so many things that we can pick apart about who we are that will make us feel like we're not qualified. I have played that many times. I think a lot of times it's because I've played the paralegal, and there's people that I go to court with that have higher degrees and much more education. And so it's easy for me to feel like I'm not qualified to be a leader or an example or to have an opinion.
No, I think one thing too, you cannot possibly be good at everything. No. Right. And so one thing I've been trying to embrace over the last couple of years is there are things that I'm really good at, right? I am really good at organizing stuff. I am not good at follow through, but I try to really excel in the places where I'm naturally drawn to, and it makes me feel bad. I cannot be a completely rounded person. That's just unattainable for me. But I try to be really good. I try to amplify the things that I'm naturally good at and pursue those, because then it makes me feel confident in those realms.
Yeah. Something that I do when I'm super duper duper stressed, and I mentioned this in terms of my weight, but it goes for other aspects of my health as well, is neglecting self-care. And I know that that is a very generational thing. People of my generation and the boomers before us are like, girl, get a grip. We do not have the bougie life experience to have self-care and do all the frou-frou things that kids are doing these days. But I do have to say, it's something that being open to younger generations has made me appreciate about those generations, which is they make a lot of effort to do things out of pure joy. And speaking of that, I guess that brings us into trying to find some balance, Angie.
Yes, it does. Because this, okay, we didn't want this to be just event. Like, we wanted to air some laundry just to make people feel seen and not alone. But we didn't want this to be just event session. And so we also want to share some strategies that have worked for us. So if these speak to you, take them. We share them freely. My top one is work-rest balance. And I know the term work-life balance is popular, but I mean something a little bit different here. I don't mean that I log in at 9 and log off at 5, come hell or high water, because that's just not realistic for this line of work. My boundaries aren't always time-based. Maybe they have to be a little bit more flexible. Like for me, I had to say, all right, when I close my computer, I'm closing myself off to work. I'm not checking Slack on my phone. I'm not going to check email on my phone. And granted, there are exceptions to that rule. I can't do that every day. But generally, I really try to stick to that because I want to be present in whatever I'm doing, whether it's work, being with my kid, or even just watching trash TV. So my whole life, I've had this very complicated relationship with rest. My parents are not restful people. They view it as laziness. And here in America, I feel like there's a sexiness to busyness that doesn't apply to rest. You know, I took this from my childhood and from culture, and then I went to work at a law firm where time, i.e. busyness, was the commodity. I mean, I measured my life in 6-minute increments for years. I mean, all this to say, I was not bred for rest. And I still struggle with feelings of guilt when I just want to rot on the couch for a day. But rotting with intentionality helps me feel like I'm doing it for a purpose, because I am, in fact, doing it for a purpose. We cannot be on 100% of the time. We just can't. We're not built that way.
I totally relate to that. I mean, I feel tremendous guilt if I'm not doing anything. And it hasn't been until... I think a lot of it has to do with the way that you were raised, like you said, which is going back to our bias. But I think it's beyond that too. It's kind of like the way I was raised plus my personality type, like my personality, which we took this assessment at work, which was hilarious. But in that assessment, the personality type, or whatever, I don't know if that's what really is the right descriptor, but the personality type's biggest pet peeve was wasted time. And I'm like, amen. I can totally relate to that. Like, I want to be making progress all the time, 24/7. I hate to sleep. Like, that is me.
I think it's redefining waste, right?
Yeah. I have realized when I take a 15-minute nap, or if I take a Saturday or Sunday or weekend to completely be a vegetable, then I'm prepared and I can be so much better for everybody else. I mean, when you burn your candle at both ends, it's like, yeah, you show up, but then you're kind of a frazzled mess and you don't follow up with shit.
So what's one thing that's really worked well for you other than work rest balance?
I mean, something that's worked for me, take a look at how you value counseling and your mental health. For me, there's so many things that happen to me at work today. I'm 48 years old. There's things that happen at work that have everything to do with my mental makeup because of things that happened to me when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And I find that fascinating because being as old as I am, you would think that you were so far and removed from things that happened such a long time ago. But when you go through trauma in your life, whether it's as a child or an adult, the way that your body and your brain deal with that trauma create coping mechanisms that actually bleed over into other aspects of your life. And if you don't watch out, the negative side effects of the way that you're dealing with that can actually self-sabotage you. But all that to say, mental health is important. Oh, can I tell you how wonderful it is to realize when you're an adult that you have a learning disability? Oh, well, this explains so much about me. Like, I had no idea. Yes. And figuring those things out is so empowering because now it's not a crutch. I'm not a victim. I'm not trying to milk it for all it's worth. But what I'm trying to do is better understand my own makeup so that I can quickly identify the things that keep me from being successful.
Absolutely. Make time for your mental health kink and be proud of it. For me, my mental health kink is running. Nothing sets me straight like a good long run. So I decided that when I go running, it's my me time. I don't check my phone. I listen to whatever I want to listen to, whether it's a podcast, an audiobook, Maisie Peters, or Metallica. And I'm clear about the immense benefits to my mental health with everyone in my life so that everybody knows why this is such a high priority for me and they respect it. So yeah, find your kink and lean into it.
I like that. Well, and another thing that I think is important for all of us when we started earlier in this conversation was we were talking about boundaries and how we need to establish boundaries. I mean, if you've been anywhere your whole adult life, somebody's told you to establish boundaries. You need to realize what is actually in your control. And then once you realize that and the ways that you are stepping out outside of those boundaries, which for me always has to do with me trying to be so damn helpful. Why am I trying to be helpful?
The people pleasing, the overcommitting, always.
Sucks. And there's people that will suck you dry and they don't actually mean to be mean, but they're taking all of yourself and it's not fair.
You kind of let them do it.
You did. You enabled them. You want to establish your boundaries. And just like with children, you cannot give consequences and then not follow through. If I tell my son, if you do that one more time, I'm taking away your video game, but I never actually take it away. Guess what? He's going to keep doing whatever the hell he's doing.
Yeah. Same thing. You cannot get true. Power struggles with children. It does not work.
No. And same thing is true with our boundaries. If we say, oh man, I really need to stop doing this for so-and-so because they're just taking advantage of me and they really need to be able to do this themselves and that's not my job and it's taking my time and I don't have any more time and I'm stressed out and I'm fat and I can't even work out because I'm so busy trying to solve this other person's problem for them. That is your fault, first of all. So take responsibility for it. Lay your freaking boundary down and then stand by it. When they come back and they bark, it's going to be conflict and it's going to be uncomfortable. But you know what? You deserve it. You're worth it. And I'll tell you, I have made many people mad in my family because I've had to establish some really crappy boundaries. I have to say, I can do this. I can't do that. And that is the way it's going to be. And you can put me on all the guilt trips that you want to put me on and say all the things that you want to say. And it's not going
to
hurt.
Do write to us and tell us your family drama stories because we do want that tea.
Oh, God. We have to wait for the holidays. I'm sure I'm going to have so much to share. I'm going to have to figure out. We're going to have to come up with like fake names for family members. So if they listen, they don't know I'm talking about them.
I love this for us. Okay. So along the lines of drawing boundaries. This is one of my faves, time and or calendar blocking. Every Friday, I go through my calendar for the following week and I assign time for specific things. And then during that time, I do only that thing. I'm not perfect at this. I screw up. I'm human, but I try. And so for example, like every Thursday, I have an hour devoted to my reading list. And during the week, I collect articles, studies, whatever, and I add them to that list. And then every Thursday, I start the day by working through those items. But, and here's the thing that's been critical for me, I also schedule email and Slack time blocks on my calendar. And depending what's going on, they might be more frequent or more flexible. If I'm not in an email or a Slack time block, I'm not checking them. And for me, just having that block on my calendar, it makes me feel like I'm not being irresponsible. I'm not ignoring people. I will get to you. I'm just prioritizing other things at the moment. I'm just being intentional with my time. And guess what? Sometimes it takes me 30 minutes to respond instead of 2 minutes, and the world hasn't caught fire yet. So I feel like it's going okay.
Yeah. And I mean, I would add to the whole staying in your boundaries conversation to stay in your own lane. Like, this is a boundary that I currently deal with. And it took me a long time to figure out what I was doing. But stay in your damn lane. Know what your job is. Know what your expectations are. Know what you're supposed to be responsible for. And then let others do their job the way that they want to do that job. And be okay with whatever that outcome is as a result. I had a tendency to decide, hi, I have these high expectations and it will be fill in the blank. And whether or not other people on the team decide that that's their expectation level, I will step in and do their job for them until we get to that level of amazingness, because I will not settle for anything less. Well, that's great. And you know what? Yay to people that want to shoot for the stars like me. Yay us. But you know what? It makes us really lonely when we get to the stars and nobody else is there because you pushed them all away because you stepped in and took over their piece and didn't listen to them and did it the way that you thought was the best way. And guess what? You don't know the best way all the time. The other thing that happens when you do step in somebody's lane is that all of a sudden, you took away what their value is that they're bringing to the table. And so now you are not only sabotaging the group by you being some dictator, you're also taking away somebody else's opportunity to learn, to grow, to reach out, to ask for help. There's much better ways of handling those kinds of situations. If you see somebody struggling or not meeting their end of the bargain, it would be a better situation to ask how you can help them rather than to just lord over and take over. This might seem like a no-brainer, but for me,
it's hard.
It took me a minute to accept this. And probably a lot of it has been just because my whole life, I've been the oldest one. I've been in charge. I've been the one that's had to make all the decisions in multiple areas of my life. And I didn't have to consider a lot of other people. I just had to do. And if you didn't do, you died. And so I just jumped in and did.
I think also just finding the joy in the little things can be so important. I've started leaning into my coffee moment in the morning, which is such a just tired 30-something thing to do. But I really, you know, I've got myself the fancy-ass oat milk now. I got my little syrups. You know, I've started making Bailey's from scratch.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Angie has been somebody who reinforces that in my life often. I know that you probably heard on our episodes previously, but she likes to go collect rocks and shine them and collect them from adventures that she's been on. And that brings her joy. And that's a very simple thing to do that is a reminder of the things that make us happy. Watercoloring for me is one of those things.
I love that.
We all know what our little things are that bring us joy. Yeah. And allow yourself the luxury to do it. It doesn't have to be a whole lot. Just find joy in it.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. And so with that, let's close out this show. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to eDiscovery Chicks wherever you get your podcasts. Please visit our website. It's ediscoverychicks.com. And then please recommend us to your friends, family, and coworkers. And of course, feel free to hit us up on LinkedIn or through our website with your thoughts, questions, drink recommendations, or holiday family drama stories. We want them all. All right, folks, until next time. Bye.
The views we've expressed today are the eDiscovery Chicks views and do not necessarily represent the views of our employers, partners, or clients. This podcast is available solely for educational purposes to provide general information about eDiscovery principles and not to provide legal advice to any specific situation. It is not a substitute for legal advice from a lawyer you've retained and who has agreed to represent you.